This program is made possible through a grant from the Minnesota Humanities Foundation in conjunction with the National Endowment for the Humanities.
As I look into the future, I see a number of problems, confrontations, potential crisis areas that have to do with our continued survival as a people. One of the first things is to consider is the desperate need to disengage ourselves from a sense of intellectual dependency. That is to say that there's going to be an enormous struggle for the control of black minds.
In the first two segments of Blacks in Minnesota, we viewed bits of the past and present of the black community through the eyes of some of its residents. Older members of the community recalled what it was like for blacks in the early part of the century. They remembered that there were very few blacks in Minnesota. Jobs were hard to find. Housing for blacks, for the most part, was substandard. The unwritten laws of bigotry kept blacks out of many establishments throughout the state. Racial prejudice made hard times even harder. We asked members of the black community questions regarding the present. By and large, those interviewed said that although improvements have been made in housing, employment, education, and other facets of community life, things had not changed enough. They felt that if you are black, the quality of life is diminished by reasons of prevalent racism. What do the coming years hold for the black community? Will we learn from our mistakes, build upon our positive aspects? Or will we simply sit back and take what comes? In this third and last segment, we look at some of the visions and hopes of the black community. Minorities in Focus presents Blacks in Minnesota, the future.
That the brotherhood of man will become a reality in this day. With this faith, I will go out, carve a tunnel of hope through the mountain of despair. With this faith, I will go out with you and transform dark yesterdays into bright tomorrows.
Ralph Crowder is a teacher at Augsburg College. He's written a number of articles for local black newspapers. Most recently, his writings have concerned themselves with the future. Mr. Crowder, a member of the black community, shares some of his visions of the future.
As I look into the future, I see a number of problems, confrontations, potential crisis areas that have to do with our continued survival as a people. I think one of the first things is to consider is the desperate need to disengage ourselves from a sense of intellectual dependency. That is to say that there's going to be an enormous struggle for the control of black minds. And I think that's inevitable in some respects as we begin to take a look at some of recent studies, recent writings, even certain amount of information that surrounds the day-to-day media. So one of the first things to realize is that there's going to be, I think, a continued struggle for black people to control the images that are painted of themselves, to continue to capture and control the definition of their history, and more importantly, to disengage themselves from being intellectually and psychologically dependent upon outside interpreters of our experience. It's going to be one of the first challenges, I think, as we approach the 21st century. The challenge of who will control black minds. Will it be black people or will it be someone else?
Mr. Crowder referred to an interview article he had read about Professor Harold Cruz. Professor Cruz, a black strategist, is on the staff of the University of Michigan. During the interview, Professor Cruz talked about the crisis of the cities and its relation to blacks.
Basically, the urban crisis is a black crisis. Throughout the United States, we find that rapidly the major metropolitan areas are having a extraordinary representation of black people, anywhere from 10 to 12 to something like possibly 75 to 80% as represented by Washington, D.C. So fundamentally, what is perceived as being an urban crisis is unconditionally a black problem, simply because the location of our bulk of our population. The urban experience has been a very difficult experience for black people. I think that we've only been urbanized possibly since maybe 1940s or the late 40s. It's unfair to say that our urban experience possibly began in 1920. From the period of about 1900 to 1920, there was a large mass internal migration of blacks moving from the rural South to the urban North. However, still by 1920, 80% of the black population lived in the South. So it's safe to say that maybe we have only been urbanized possibly in the last, maybe 30 to 35 years. So the urban experience and what is purported to be the urban crisis will be another fundamental problem that will be facing black people in the future, that we must develop a tactic and a strategy and some type of rationale and thesis to deal with.
There is a saying that the future belongs to the young. What about your child and my child? How will they fare in the years to come?
I think the question of what is happening to black youth is an enormous problem. I've also finished reading a very interesting article, Black Youth and Endangered Species, by Francis Ward, the Midwest correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. His predictions about the future of black youth and some of the problems of facing black youth are rather startling. Based upon two noted black researchers, one that I recall by the name of Robert Hill, who was Dr. Robert Hill was affiliated with the National Urban League. Somewhere in the neighborhood of 500 to 600,000 black youth roam our urban environments and occupy the recorded unemployed. Unemployment and kind of the lost generation of black youth is an enormous problem that must be confronted head on I think black energy, black insight, because black youth represent the future seeds of our generation. And if they are lost now, we are lost as a race. So I think that's another critical futurist type of problem that will be facing us that is not necessarily a part of the 21st century, but there are earth-shaking and shattering predictions that somewhere in the neighborhood of possibly a million black youth, if we record from the ages of 8 to 16 who are supposed to be in school, if we take the figure of the jobless unemployed somewhere between 18 to 22, according to the Ward article, we have somewhere in the neighborhood of a million black youth who are roaming major metropolitan areas, you know, without the lack of any type of authority, lack of any type of direction, and somewhat lack of a purpose. You know, I think that's a desperate and dangerous problem that we have to address ourselves to immediately. More and more black students are kind of, I think, being dismantled and often destroyed intellectually. They may be receiving some type of training in some respects in terms of our primary and secondary schools. I think, I don't even think the question of training is taking place. It's alarming when you begin to take a look at the number of people that are graduated who do not, who are functionally illiterate, who cannot read, who cannot write, and more than likely are in a situation where the institution does not give a damn about them, you know? So I think that it's extremely important, and particularly on the primary and secondary level, for the community to reach out its arms and hands, every responsible black adult, and if he can, take out of his busy schedule 1 or 2 days, you know, in the course of a month, and just walk around in some of our inner city schools and see some of the chaos that's existing there, you know. It's very important for educators to realize, and for, I think, parents to realize, community realize, that in the context of educational institutions, there's an enormous impact made upon students in terms of his or her socialization process, his or her image of oneself, you know, and all. In some respects, I think a number of our students are being programmed for failure, programmed for future failure, you know, not only in the context of institutions, but in the context of life, you know, and all. So I think that that's enormously important. The second thing is to begin to take a look at college students. I don't know. I mean, it's, I see, you know, a lack of a sense of mission on college students. Often people not understanding that they will, in the very short few years, be placed in some positions of responsibility. I see sometimes people allowing themselves to be crippled, and unfortunately, one of the real desperate things that happens to us is that when people leave any type of institution crippled, they go back to the black community, cripple other black people. We cannot abandon, you know, our young students or our college-age students at all, and act as if that they have no kind of future input into where we will be in terms of a, you know, total population, in terms of a group of people, in terms of a race. You know, no, I think that's immensely important for us to begin to deal with that.
Mr. Crowder feels that among the things that needs to happen in the black community to prepare for the future is unity.
People in this community desperately need to come together as a solidified group of people. There's absolutely no reason at all why that Mississippi River on that bridge should act as some artificial boundary between black people and all. That why not, you know, black people in St. Paul or blacks in Minneapolis, you know, must, I think, enter into some cooperative, you know, agreement to assist, communicate, and work with one another. And, you know, in some communities, there are more black people in terms of total population in 2 or 3 square blocks than we have in Minneapolis and St. Paul. And so I think that it's incumbent upon us to do that.
Communication will play a vital role in the coming years. Personal communications between individuals, as well as mass communications. Those who control the mass media, that is television, newspapers, radio, films, have the potential of controlling the minds of an entire population. Al McFarlane is a communicator. He's the editor and publisher of Insight News, a biweekly tabloid distributed in North Minneapolis. He is also concerned about the future, and in his own way, is working to make that future the best possible for the black community.
You know, communications is the name of the game. If you don't have it, you know, that cuts off so many more things. You know, communications by itself doesn't mean, you know, a lot. It means something, but it can open many more doors. If you have your own system of communications, it means something. I feel that, you know, philosophically, that communications is really important, because that was one of the tools that was used to suppress black people from the beginning. You know, everybody talks about how when African people were first brought to the shores of America, what whites did was systematically break up language groups, so that if one person was a Fulana and another was a Yoruba and another was Igbo, another was Yanji, different tribes, they would mix them up so that two Yoruba couldn't be together, two whatever nationalities couldn't be together, just to break down the ability of blacks to communicate. And then what whites did was force blacks to communicate through their own language, which was English, by and large. So they broke down, in a sense, our own communication process and had us begin communicating through a language and a culture that was based on their existence and their survival needs and their values, okay, but that at the same time put us in a negative position. Like, you know, inside the white cultural reality, white meant good, you know, and black meant bad. You know, if it was black, it wasn't good. And, you know, if it was white, it was pure and clean. Well, those are just values that white people have in their culture. And I don't argue against that. That's their business. You know, if that's the way you want to see it, you can. But they forced that kind of way of looking at things on black people. I think that, you know, the language and the culture and the ability to communicate here, you know, is what I'm talking about. That's the key thing. And I think that from this point on, and to sort of try to straighten ourselves out the next 100 years, next 200 years, we need to take a serious look at our ability to communicate. We need to be in control of our means of communicating to each other. So that's what I hope Insight will encourage in other people. Our paper has a market of the North Side, and we print 20,000 copies of this paper every issue, every week. We're bi-weekly, so we print 26 times a year, every other week. We deliver, of these 20,000, 16,500 door-to-door, and the remaining 3,500 copies we put out on newsstands in Camden, downtown Minneapolis, Crystal, Robbinsdale, Golden Valley, Brooklyn Park, and Brooklyn Center. We also have some newsstand distribution in St. Paul, down by the Capitol, and in the Summit University area of St. Paul. Okay, the reason we get these papers out like we do is that we are telling advertisers that if you buy an ad in Insight, so many thousand people are going to be seeing your ad. Therefore, if they see your ad and you got a good product or good service, they may be inclined to come and buy from you. In the newspaper business, an advertising salesman will say that his paper will have maybe a 3-to-1 or 4-to-1 pass-along ratio. That means that if I'm printing 20,000 copies of Insight and distributing those every week, it's likely that each paper is reaching 3 readers or 4 readers. If each of ours is reaching 4 readers, that means the Insight readership is somewhere in the area of 80,000. North Minneapolis is a unique area. The area we serve is unique. One of the unique things about it is there has been a great need for a communications vehicle. I think many people in North Minneapolis have always talked about how dissatisfied this community has been with the Minneapolis Star and Tribune. And they've been dissatisfied because, one, the Star and Tribune don't carry any news that relate to North Minneapolis except for bad news, okay? We get the stuff about the who shot who, who hurt who, and who's down and out, but we never get any kind of positive coverage in this community about this community. The other thing is that of all the cities in the metropolitan area that are served by the Star and Tribune, this neighborhood is the one that has the lowest circulation by the Star and Tribune of any. That means that there's a void here. There's a communications void that people here are just, either they're turned off to the Star and Tribune and they've decided just not to buy any newspapers. So they're not getting news except for on television, and television news is not much better than Star and Tribune news as far as coverage of this community. So that increases the reality that increases the need. You know, this neighborhood had no real internal communications vehicle until Insight, okay? But that all of that went into, you know, a couple of things. I guess I'm saying all this to say that Insight is fulfilling a communications need for residents. People need to have information that they can relate to that's about them, that shows the good as well as the bad. But on the other hand, there are 80,000 consumers in North Minneapolis who are not being marketed to, and Insight is a vehicle for businesses to reach 80,000 people who are buying something or another. So that's what, you know, that's how we go after business. We tell a store or somebody, we can deliver your message, your ad, to 80,000 sets of eyes, and that's a big job, and we're doing that.
We asked Mr. McFarland if he saw the local black press becoming a daily newspaper in the future.
Not here in Minneapolis. I don't see a black newspaper developing anytime soon, but, you know, the thing is, there could be. There really could be and should be. I have often talked with one of the publishers of, or two publishers of the other black papers, and every time I get a chance to talk to them, I throw off the idea of us coming up and collaborating. I feel that there are so few of us here in the publishing business that individually we really can't do a lot of good. We can't make much impact. But if we could find a way to all pull together, you know, to either pool our resources and pool our talents and put together one dynamic, you know, and forceful news organization, we could shake this town up business-wise and also from the news point of view.
Mr. McFarland also sees unity within the black community as being very important, and he sees hope in that direction.
I think we're going to start pulling together. That's what I see. I feel good. I feel positive. I think that in time and as time goes by, a lot of the barriers we have, the things, the lack of trust, that will begin to disappear and be replaced by a feeling of natural trust, that we'll come to reach some natural agreements, natural alignments, begin to build natural and holistic and realistic alliances among ourselves. And I think we have the energy and we have the power. We just need to make that commitment to pull, you know, for each other and pull together. And I think it's going to happen.
Nearly every resident of the black community we interviewed named unity as a vital element in the future survival of the community. One young man named Ralph, a student at the Street Academy in South Minneapolis, very aptly pointed something out. He said, when most blacks talk about the black community, they refer to it as their community or that community. Problems in the black community are referred to as their problems. When talking about the black race, they refer to it as those people. He said that in our very manner of speaking, we deny any kinship or responsibility, and that when we can begin to say and mean our problems, our people, and our community, that respect and love for each other and our community will begin to grow. Then, and only then, can we begin to move toward a better future. This is Jeanette Cotton speaking.
Everything will change. Everything must change. Nothing stays the same. Everyone must change. Nothing stays the same. The young become the old. Mysteries do unfold. 'Cause that's the way of time. Nothing and no one goes unchanged. There are not many things in life you can be sure of, except rain comes from the clouds, sunlight up the sky, and hummingbirds do fly. Winter turns to spring. Wounded heart will heal. Yes, it will, but never much too soon. Everything must change. The young become the old. Mysteries do unfold. 'Cause that's the way of time. Nothing and no one goes.
That the brotherhood of man will become a reality in this day. With this faith, I will go out and carve a tunnel of hope through the mountain of despair. With this faith, I will go out with you and transform dark yesterdays into bright tomorrows. With this faith, we will be able to achieve this new day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing with the Negroes in the spiritual of all, free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty. Yes,
Blacks in Minnesota is a production of WMOJ Radio, which is part of the Center for Communication and Development. The opinions expressed here are entirely those of the participants of the program and do not reflect those of WMOJ Radio, the Center for Communication and Development, the Minnesota Humanities Foundation, or the National Endowment for the Humanities.